Welcome to our regular scheduled village board meeting. It's just on top of the 7 o'clock, so I'll ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Bochner?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Brennan? Brennan, Katie, I can see you.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't hear you. I am here.
Johnson? Here. And Ducey?
Here. Okay, if I can ask everyone to please stand and check the pledge of allegiance.
Flag of the United States of America, the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yes. Yes. But I think the Governor Pritzker's executive order allows for us to be remote. Yes.
Yes, it does.
That's correct. So
I'll let our village, our interim village attorney, talk.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. During the pandemic, the Open Meetings Act was amended. So as long as a public health emergency is still in effect, we are.
You're welcome. Okay, with that, we have, I believe, one citizen.
None.
No, yeah, we do have Dan. Dan Hollander. Hi, Dan. Please take the podium and state your name and why you're here.
It's okay to take this off or no?
I'm okay with it. That's fine because we can't hear, so I'm cool. Thank you.
It's better, right?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm Dan Hollenbach. I live at 610 Park, River Forest, Illinois. And I just wanted to come here and a couple things. One, say thank you to the fire department and the police department and the paramedics. Because Tuesday, August 24th, I had a electrical fire in my backyard. And, let's just say it was kind of scary. And I'm, really happy for their support. But the following day, and nobody was injured, which is a great thing. But the following day, the reliability engineer for ComEd came out. His name is George Genovese, G-E-N-O-V-E-S-I, Gregory, sorry. And he's the reliability engineer. He said, hey, Mr. Hollenbach, I've been trying for a long time. I live on Park, so the cables gone up 5 times already this summer. And in the past, they usually go out, 2 or 3 times. And it shuts down a lot of River Forest residents. I think it's a main line.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, but it's kind of political. He said, ComEd has buckets of different money to get upgrades. And basically, he's going to put in his report. But he said, hey, you should talk to the village, make sure they're aware of the situation. Because you have a ComEd liaison,
yeah.
I believe,
yeah.
That you could bring it up and say, hey, this is a pretty big issue. So it's Hendrick spacer cables. I'm not familiar with just what I've read online is the upgrade. And I think they pay for it. So it's nothing out of the village's money. Mm-hmm. But, your support would be great. Luckily, nobody got hurt. I think it was quite a bit of firemen came. So it was awesome. Really, really appreciate it because it could have been very dangerous.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have happen in the future. I know a lot of people have those generators now. I do, but mine's not one of those fancy ones, and it's broken, and my wife's really mad at me. So.
Well, as I understand it, Tracy said that, you were walking out there. You might have gotten a little electric shock a little bit when you were walking out there. But it looks like you're okay. So,
yeah, I'm okay.
So, Dan, I'm lucky you're here in one piece.
The paramedics checked me out, and I'm fine, obviously. But, yeah, so anyway.
No, we take this serious, and we do have a ComEd liaison, and we have a very good relationship with ComEd. and they have upgraded a lot of our infrastructure. So we take what you say very serious, and I'm going to look at Lisa and Jeff to follow up on that with so that and get back to you on it as well. We want to make sure you as a resident know what we're doing, but more importantly, we'll get back to all the residents to make sure that they understand, you know, what we do with ComEd and how we, you know, how the things that we invest in and what they invest in terms of our infrastructure. So,
and I appreciate it. And just left out, you know, we let them come in our yard, you know, to fix it. And then, you know, the tire tracks and everything. Again, everybody's safe, but, you know, I do my own yard work, right? Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, thank God you're okay. And we will we'll look into this and not only get back to you, but make sure that it's maybe part of our newsletter too, because this is a great relation. We have a great relationship with ComEd, and they've done quite a bit in River Forest. We probably should talk about that.
George, he spent like 2 hours with me going over everything. So he was really great, but he's going to do a report. So, thank you. Thanks for the time.
Well, thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Kathy, I apologize. This is Erica. So what is it that we have the ComEd liaison for, and how can they help homeowners or residents in these situations?
Well, we have a ComEd liaison that works with us for all of their, you know, electrical lines in River Forest. So, you know, we've done, I know, various things like when trimming trees around the electrical lines, you know, installing. I know we just did a massive, and Jeff, you probably remember this years ago, we did a massive upgrade on some of our electrical lines as well. Is that what you're asking? Because I couldn't really hear.
Was there a power line down? Is that what happened for this resident?
It sounds like it was a power line down, and it sounds like Dan was saying, as he was talking to the ComEd person, that there is a ComEd liaison, which there is, and that there are possible upgrades that may be able to either prevent this or make it a lot less dangerous.
Understood.
So we'll look into it. So Lisa and Jeff know that, and we'll get back to Dan and certainly find out from the liaison, you know, what we can do differently to ensure that something like that doesn't happen again, or what happened.
Is that liaison someone who our residents can have contact with themselves, or do they have to go through the village to communicate?
Well, typically, Katie, anybody can go to ComEd. There is a ComEd website. If you haven't used it, I would absolutely think you all should, including the trustees. It's a, you know, you can get up-to-date information on power outages and where power outages are and when the estimated time of restore. You can also get a hold of ComEd personnel. This person is just a liaison that each ComEd has with each of the municipalities. So we do have a liaison that I'm aware of that we work with for our municipality. Yep. But it's
I'm familiar with.
And I think
of course, I'm familiar with the ComEd website and their alerts. What I was wondering is if it would be helpful for residents to be able to communicate directly with the liaison, if that's appropriate.
That's a government affairs.
That's a government affairs person. The website is for residents to communicate to ComEd.
So we don't put in touch with the liaison.
The liaison is for the municipality to work with. That Dan is referring to. But if you want to talk to ComEd or you want to alert ComEd with a problem, I'd say go to the website.
As you find it, what George said, go to the website. It's really helpful.
Yep.
It's pretty easy.
Process. Thank you. All right, so moving on to elected official comments and announcements. So why don't we go ahead with Trustee Johnson, do you want to go? You got anything to add?
Today I don't have much to say. I just want to wish all our residents a happy summer, and I hope everyone's getting back to school okay. And to, as always, be aware that we're not out of the COVID pandemic just yet, and to please protect yourself and your family as much as possible.
Katie?
Thank you. Yeah, I just have two things. First, I want to mention that I participated in the annual Lemonade charity event on Saturday, this past Saturday, 9/11. It was the 20th anniversary, of course, of 9/11, but also of the lemonade stand. And it was a beautiful day. It was really well attended. Sorry. As always, the block came together and put on a wonderful event that had a lot of fun and games and good entertainment and appropriately solemn remembrances. We don't have any final numbers yet on how much was raised for the two charities, but it's looking good. And if you would still like to, you can. So I wanted to mention the three ways that you can still donate before the final numbers are tallied up. You can either go on the two charities' websites, and those are Friends of the Children and the Infant Welfare Society, or you can send a check made out to Lemonade, and Lemonade is spelled A-I-D, not the traditional spelling of lemonade, and send it to 714 Bonnie Bray in River Forest, or drop it by in the mailbox. So that's it for Lemonade. And then I also thought I'd mention that Lois and Heidi from Maywood Fine Arts reached out to me a couple of weeks ago. They are getting ready for their annual Pumpkin Patch Parade, which is going to be held on October 9th, which is a Saturday in the morning. So this is a save the date request. And what they mentioned is that they, last year they focused on equity and opportunities in the arts. This year they were looking at the Maywood River Forest Twin Covenant Agreement and trying to see if there was something they could do with that to highlight our partnership and raise awareness of our partnership. And so we talked about perhaps doing their annual parade together, crossing the bridge between our two villages. And so I know that they have had further conversations with you, Erica, I think. I don't know if you have anything more to add at this point. It's probably still being planned.
It is. I won't take your time. I'll mention a couple of items when during my public comments, but thanks for highlighting it.
Yeah, thank you.
That's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Katie.
Good.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. And good evening, everyone. First, let's see, a couple of items. Number one, I attended an event with Visit Oak Park, who's basically the sponsorship for building up tourism and businesses within, although it's named Oak Park, but it's really River Forest and the neighboring communities. So it was good, the state liaison regarding tourism was also there. So she shed light of how the governor is really focused on building up the tourism for our community as well. So it was great that she was there. So there'll be probably more plans they're gonna roll out regarding how they're gonna help us and work on that and promote our communities. So that was number one. Number two, I do want to also acknowledge the 20th anniversary in remembrance of all those who passed away and were injured, and also acknowledging all the first responders who were there at the event, as well as the current first responders who are currently and continue to help and protect our communities. So thank you all for that as well. I also joined the Lemonade event on Saturday. It was a terrific event. I'm not going to repeat everything Trustee Brennan said, but it was a good event in terms of a lot of participation, contributions. So I was happy to be there as well. Last but not least, on September the 8th, my age-friendly advisory committee met. And I'm happy to say that we came up with a final survey with the questions, which is terrific. We're probably going to focus on little minor tweaks, but the questions are pretty much there. We're actually now going to be planning in terms of how we're going to roll it out in terms of coming up with a plan for distribution as well as a possible budget. And stages of how we're going to roll it out. So so it's looking good and coming soon. So that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. So I'd like to start off with a land acknowledgement. And as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on lands that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, the Menominee and Potawatomi nations, and more. And we remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. And I had the honor a couple of weeks ago to join Dominican University at the start of their school semester and welcome a few hundred students to our community. And it was really wonderful to see the campus, just the vitality of all those young kids and their families and the start of the academic year, especially coming from somebody who also works in an academic institution. Really good to see that coming back around. So really, it was a wonderful start. Was able to meet the new president of the university. And I just encourage everyone, if you see Dominican events, to please go ahead, and they are such a great part of our community, to take advantage of all the wonderful things that they have going on at the university. And want to thank Trustee Brennan for bringing up the walk that the Maywood Fine Arts Group is going to be having. As she mentioned, it's going to be Saturday, October 9th, and it is a walk for equity and opportunity in the arts, and their theme is Imagine More. That is their overall theme, I believe, for the year, and the Village of Maywood and the Village of River Forest are going to be walking together with them. They usually have a nice turnout to this, and the idea of really bringing the two communities together is absolutely in the spirit of the Twin Village Covenant. And we are likely planning to start at the Maywood Fine Arts Building at 9:30, walk down Lake Street and meet up at Keystone Park, and then have some people speak there and then go back to Maywood. So barring anything changing because of other stuff planned or of any details, that is the plan. And so the hope is that River Forest residents would meet us either at the Maywood side or on the River Forest side, and then continue and participate with the walk. And just that group does such phenomenal work in the community. So happy that they are they're continuing to have such a dedication to the Twin Village Covenant. I'd also like to note Mindy Creddy provided this information. So there's a lot going on in the area. There's going to be a family pride parade on Sunday, October 3rd, and that is going to have outdoor festivities at Urban Village Church. And that's at 7970 Lake Street for anybody who's not aware. And again, just another wonderful opportunity to be involved and you know, join in equitable events and ones that promote diversity. Last week was invited by Trustee Jones out of Maywood in a discussion to see if the streets between River Forest and Maywood that neither one of us have control of. I believe that the county and the state have control of them, to see if we could begin to maybe put some bike lanes, striping, and potentially sidewalks to further connect our communities. And spoke with the Department of Transportation Highways just as a preliminary discussion. And they were really eager about the project. So they're gonna do a little bit more feasibility information gathering to see where that comes, what comes out of that. And that was at the request of Commissioners Brandon Johnson, Pete Silvestri, who also participated in the discussion. So nothing quite to do yet, just more information gathering and getting, just, you know, checking in with the village. So I wanted to point that out. And a couple of other things. I do know that block parties are underway. We are in the season of block parties. Our block is having one next Saturday. And just a reminder to everyone to make sure that you're masking up. I know that there's a little bit of a surge of different variants of COVID now. And so just make sure that you are mindful of social distancing, of using hand sanitizer and keeping safe during those kinds of events. And then the only other question I have is for maybe Lisa or Kathy. The restaurant La Parita had mentioned to me a while back, and I hadn't followed up on it, but they had mentioned the possibility of obtaining a liquor license. And I just wanted to see what was, what came out of that.
Yeah, so that's gonna go through the background check and we'll bring that back to the village board.
Great. Thanks so much. And that's it for me.
Thank you. And thank you to Trustee Bachner and Trustee Vasquez for attending those events. I know I could not attend it. I was out of town. So thank you, Erica, for attending Dominican. That was a very important meeting. So I appreciate you going to that event on behalf of the village and myself. And Trustee Vasquez going to, of course, Lemonade. Unfortunately, I could not attend. And it's a wonderful event, and I felt bad that I had to be out of town. So thank you for saying a few words on behalf of the village, as well as Visit Oak Park. Those are, you know, events that, you know, police organizations that we appreciate and respect. Thank you. Just a couple of things. Not much. I have October 3rd must be a busy day, Erica, because that is also the Tour de Proviso. We are partnering up with our good friends and my good friend Katrina Thompson, Mayor Thompson from Broadview, Maywood, Bellwood, Riverside, us, and I believe maybe North Riverside. There's five communities that are coming together for this bike ride. It starts at 9:30 at the Village of Broadview, so we'll post more about it. Saturday the 2nd. Oh, it was a mistake on the, because they have October 3rd. Saturday the 2nd. Thank you. We might want to double check on that. So good stuff. Sounds great that we're partnering with all of our surrounding communities. Also, I want to thank the fire department, the police department, especially in light of 9/11, the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and the tragedy that happened in our country, and all the good work that all of you do on behalf of our country and behalf of our community here. I want to personally say thank you. And the village very much appreciates everything that you do. In fact, I got a call from one of our residents and former trustee Jim Winnicate, who sent me a voicemail. And again, he was rushed to the hospital, but he had enough time and energy to call me to let me know just how well and how respectful you treated him, the paramedics and the fire department, while you were transporting him to the hospital. He was deeply appreciated. So thank you again. We keep getting just wonderful accolades of all the work that you do on behalf of the village. So thank you. So that's all I have for now. So we'll move on to recognizing, talk about our fire department. Recognizing our wonderful chief of fire right now, or outgoing chief of fire, Kirk Bowman. So I will hand it over to you, Lisa.
So Kurt, we're going to embarrass you for just a minute, and then we're going to have you come up and embarrass you even more. So tonight we are recognizing Kirk Bowman, who is retiring his position on Monday, September 20th, after 31 years of service to this community. Prior to joining the fire department in 1990, Kurt attended Concordia University here in River Forest and also Southern Illinois University, where he earned a bachelor's degree in fire service management. In addition to his career, Kurt is married to his wife, Catherine, and they are the proud parents of 6 children. So let's all tip our hats. just wrangling 6 children is no small feat. At any rate, Kurt is also an avid softball player, a former baseball player, and he's also served as a baseball coach for many years. During his time with the River Forest Fire Department, he served as an EMS coordinator for 9 years, a hazardous materials technician, and certified fire investigator for 13 years. He also served as an adjunct faculty instructor for the Loyola University Medical Center and on the Triton College EMS Advisory Committee. Bowman was instrumental in bringing emergency medical services here to River Forest, developing a program for advanced life safety. Kurt was promoted to the position of lieutenant in December 2011. He was appointed to the position of deputy chief in 2016 and then to chief in 2017. Credentials, expertise, and leadership have made him an excellent fire chief. But it's really who Kurt is as a person that makes him an excellent teammate and friend. Care and compassion for others is evident in everything you do. For the public, you take care of the community, you take care of your employees, of your teammates. Kindness that you have had is very characteristic in how you helped us pull together a vaccine clinic, 2 vaccine clinics,
yeah,
about as many weeks, and your steady demeanor, your calm leadership during that time, and really during this last 18 months, have been a wonderful influence for our team and for this organization. And for that, I want to personally thank you and tell you that your kindness will never be forgotten. Thank you to your family for loaning us to you for 31 years. They get to have you back now. God bless your wife. And this is a job that I think this time of year we're all very cognizant of the risk and sacrifices that our first responders make in coming to work every day. Thank you. We thank the men and women who've served with you over the years, family, and congratulate you on your retirement. Come on up.
We're not going to let him go until he gets us. On behalf of the Village of River Forest, I'd like to present you this wonderful plaque that says Chief Kurt Bowman, in recognition and appreciation of your dedicated service to the Village of River Forest from 1990 to 2021. Thank you, sir. Great. Yeah. Got to give a few words.
Well, as you know, I'm not one that's big on pomp and circumstance, so. But I will say it's been an honor and a pleasure to serve here for 31 years. All of you have been great to work with, trustees in the past, all the village employees, especially all the firefighters, former firefighters that are here. Incoming acting chief, while you find my permanent replacement, who's probably deserved this a long time ago to be in this position. Thank you. And thanks to my wife, because she's the one that took care of the kids. I just kind of kicked them back into play.
Well, Kurt, we appreciate it. I remember when Eric came to me and said, I want to promote Kurt to the chief. I didn't know you very well, and I'm like, well, you know, Garrick, if this is what you think is appropriate.
and you didn't disappoint. So I want to say thank you for, you know, stepping up to the big job. I mean, you are the front line. You are the first responder to this community. And it's evident time and time again when I get calls, and I'm sure all the trustees get calls, just on how professional and respectful you are to our citizens. So thank you for leading a fabulous group of firefighters and paramedics and EMTs. So we appreciate all that you've done. Thank you so much.
Well, they are fabulous, and most of it's been them. I mean, they make me look good every day. So it's not me, it's them.
I find someone that makes me look good, personally. I'd hire them. No, thank you again. It's all great.
Well, thank you.
All right, thank you. Here I will. What the heck? We'll make the newspapers, right? Good? Come on, Bob. Follow your lead. All right, great. Thank you. Okay. Okay, let's move on to I'd be happy. I mean, Lisa, recommend that we move 9B up to now so that we can have the fire group go celebrate Chief Bowman's retirement and the acting chief. So I have no issues. So if I get a trustee to move the agenda item up.
Sure. I'd like to move that we move 9 and address 9B at this point, relating to the appointment of acting Fire Chief Robert Norchier to serve until the appointment of a permanent fire chief.
Second.
Thanks. So now that it is up, sure. So maybe we can have a motion to approve.
Sure.
Let's act on the.
Vote on it. Sorry. Thank you.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Yes. Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes. Okay. Then
now, if we can
sure. Now I'll move to give. I'm sorry. I move to appoint acting Fire Chief Robert Nortier to serve until appointment of a permanent fire chief.
Okay. So I'm going to give maybe just to Lisa a little bit to kind of talk a little bit about Robert and then a timeline for the permanent chief. I mean, I can add that, but you can add that too.
Yeah, certainly. So Bob Nortier, who's with us, Bob is the person I met on my first day of employment who really grounded me very quickly in what this job was going to require. Bob has been an excellent member of the River Forest Fire Department. He served with distinction until 2015 when he retired as the deputy fire chief. He had been a member of the department since 19. During this interim period, I think Bob is an excellent choice for this candidate. He not only has the institutional knowledge required to run this department, but he also has an excellent reputation among the firefighters. Bob is a highly qualified individual. I think his steady leadership will be of great assistance to this community during this time of transition. And I think Bob will also be instrumental in onboarding the new fire chief when that person comes on board. So for those reasons, it is my recommendation that Robert Nortier be appointed to the position of acting fire chief during this period where an interim chief is needed. In terms of timeline, just to give everybody an update, the period to apply for the position has closed. The recruiter that we retained for this purpose is in the process of reviewing those applications and vetting those candidates. Those interviews are going to begin shortly. We will be briefing the board a little further on September 27th regarding the status of this. It is our hope that we will have an offer extended next month and that the new fire chief will join us in November, certainly before the holiday. We thank Bob, just to make a point of this. Bob currently resides in Arkansas. He has decided to relocate for this interim period to help our department out. And so I think that says a lot about Bob. I think it says a lot about the department that he's willing to come back and serve in this capacity and give of his time during retirement.
Just so the trustees know, I mean, this is my appointment with, of course, your consent. So I'm, of course, I rely on, you know, Lisa and her team to provide. And of course, I know Bob from days ago, and I highly respect your position. And so when Lisa suggested you, I said, of course, it makes complete sense. So I completely support the, you know, this appointment. So if anybody has any comments or questions, hearing none, I'd ask the clerk maybe to.
Let's do the roll vote, and then we have to swear Bob in.
So we don't vote beforehand?
I would vote first and then swear.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Vote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Vasquez.
Yes.
Bennett.
Yes.
Yes.
Bob, if we can have you come up.
Ready?
I'm ready.
Where are you in?
Where are you in?
Hi, Robert Nortier. Having been appointed to the office of interim fire chief,
having been appointed to the office of
in the village of River Forest,
in the village of River Forest,
in the county of Cook,
in the county of Cook,
do solemnly swear or affirm that I support,
solemnly swear or affirm that I support
the Constitution of the United States, the
Constitution of the United States,
and the Constitution of the State of Illinois,
and the
that I will faithfully,
that I will faithfully
discharge the duties of the office of,
discharge the duties of the office
of, interim fire chief to the best of my ability.
Interim.
Congratulations. Well, as you can see, we got a great group of guys next door, and a lot of them I worked with, some retired that were, you know, I left, but they are great guys. There's two guys there I haven't worked with yet, but I'm looking forward to it. And I think, you know, from what I'm hearing, everybody does a great job, and I'd like to thank board and President Ducci and Lisa's hard work to make this happen, and I appreciate opportunity to come back in the interim position, and looking forward to what lies ahead. And again, you know, it was stated earlier that these guys, they make you look good, and I do believe Kurt, enjoy your retirement as well. It's nice, but you know. but somehow, you know, when I heard about it, I thought, you know, this kind of piqued my interest, so I appreciate the opportunity again, and hopefully that what we need to get done and better. So
thank you, and welcome
aboard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you. More than welcome to go off and Have a good time at Kirk's retirement party.
Or stay and learn more about automated metering.
Yeah. Yeah. Your choice.
Yeah. They've made their choice.
Yeah. There they go. All right, so we'll go ahead on the consent agenda as they are walking out the door. So if I can get a motion for the consent agenda A through K.
Can I ask F from the consent agenda so we can just discuss that?
I can't hear you, Katie.
She wants to pull F.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the consent agenda items A through E and D through K.
Mm-hmm. Second.
Okay, so here's second.
Second.
Okay. Any comments or questions on those items? Hearing none, if I can ask the clerk to take the vote.
Okay, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, August 9th, 2021. Right of way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 67 Bonnie Bray. B. Right of way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 726 Forest. C. National Suicide Prevention and Action Month proclamation. D. Change order number one, final, for the 2021 sewer lining project. $4,295 resolution. G. Monthly department reports. H. July financial report. I. August financial report. A. Accounts payable, August 2021, $1,529,425.72. A. Village administrators report. Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Bachner?
Yes.
Passes. So then if I can get a motion for item 5F in a second, and then we'll see questions.
I move to approve consent item F.
Second.
Ken seconded. So, okay. Katie, any questions on that item?
Yeah, it just caught my eye, or I guess I was wondering when I was looking at this bill, there's one item on there that's the largest by far, more than double, almost triple the next one that's closest to it. And I didn't understand what it was. So I wanted to have the opportunity to ask what without getting into too much detail, I don't need to see the line item of the bill, but in a general way, what does finance and administration advisory encompass?
Sure, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. Michael, do you want to answer it or I can provide some clarity? I know you don't. We work with Greg more than you, but I'm happy to.
Why don't you tag?
Sure, sounds good. So, Katie, that typically has to do with any items related to requests by the village administrator, the village board of trustees, the finance department, and other legal matters. So, for instance, if we have a code compliance case, they'll do some work under that item. If it becomes something that becomes a little more complicated, we'll have a separate code and call it out on the bill. It may be work related to just a variety of issues that fall underneath the village administrator's office or the village board of trustees.
It doesn't include litigation?
No, litigation would be called out separately.
Okay. And can we expect this this line item, finance administration advisory, to remain at this level month to month?
No, it fluctuates depending on what's going on. As you all know, at times staff time can be a little bit stretched
During this interim period, I have been relying on Greg for a couple things to just kind of help move the ball forward. And so I don't think it's something that we will be seeing long-term unless there are issues that give rise to it. Where there are issues that seem to be more persistent or, again, you know, kind of walk into litigation, or, for instance, like I mentioned before, if we have a code compliance case, we will ask KTJ to break those issues out and make them their own separate code or case code or whatever phrase you guys use to call it out on invoices as a separate issue.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Can I just add?
Sure, of course.
And you know, unfortunately, Greg is not here tonight, but Greg is always happy if you need additional detail to provide that. And the services that Lisa was describing that fall within this particular line item are in some places what we might call general kind of legal services, and so it's typically going to be one of your big. Like I said, if you have any concern, Greg is happy to elaborate.
No, we know that he's very good, and we trust Lisa's judgment on this. So, all right, very good. So, if I could get a vote, please.
The approval of payment to Klein Thorpe and Jenkins Limited for legal services in the amount of $25,984.70. Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Brennan.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Bachner?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. We have no items on the consent items for separate consideration. We have one recommendations of boards and commissions and committees. We've got Chairman Simon here. This is regarding a recommendation regarding community solar clearinghouse solution. So if I get a motion and a second, and then we can ask Chairman Simon to come up to the podium and kind of talk a little bit about the program.
I'd like to make a motion to approve a resolution endorsing the Community Solar Clearinghouse Solution Program.
Second.
Second.
Very good. Doing this.
So I know Lisa provided provided documents in the board notes. So I thought I'd just do a kind of quick summary, but then any questions you guys have, I'm happy to answer. What I really want to talk about is how this fits in with our general energy strategy from a sustainability standpoint. So first of all, what we're talking about right now is community solar, and you have a lot of information that you can take a look at, including a whole PowerPoint presentation that was done by the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus. So there's a lot of community solar programs out there. The one that we have recommended and we're running with and we're asking for the resolution on is one that's been put together and endorsed by the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus. Village of River Forest is a member of the MMC. We rely on them on all kinds of different things. This comes from their energy subcommittee, which we are also represented on. Community solar essentially is the ability to buy a share in an actual solar farm that feeds the ComEd supply. So this is different than a lot of different programs out there, and I'll explain how. But this is basically the next best thing to actually generating your own renewable electricity. So this is all part of a strategy that we've been putting in place for a number of years. As you remember, we did green aggregation probably 2 years ago. No, not even, probably a year and a half ago. That was also part of the strategy. So the hierarchy of what our residents have to choose from, the quiver of options is that, at the highest level of sustainability, people can choose to put solar on their rooftop. If they even have that opportunity. That was a program that we went through as a village called SolSmart, which gave us the ability to make that smoother for our residents, that whole process. And we're actually continuing with SolSmart to make it easier and easier for people to put solar on the rooftops. The reality is, though, is that there's an expense with that. You have to have a rooftop that faces the right direction. You might have a historically significant home that you don't want to alter the look of. And just generally speaking, about 80% of homes do not have the ability to put solar on the rooftop, right? So that's great if people can do that, and we're going to make that easy as possible. But if you can't do that, the next best thing is community solar, and that is not a program we have in place yet. So again, this is directly sourcing power from a, in our case, a solar farm in Illinois. And it's just downstate. And basically our residents would have the choice. This would be opt-in. So this is not something that would automatically be applied, but they have the choice actually at a discount to enter this program. And they would be buying a share of this, of the power that's being generated from that solar farm. So no, obviously no panels required on your roof, no investment, saves money. The delivery is still being done by ComEd, so nothing changes from that standpoint. And obviously it's a great, you know, sustainable, responsible way to you know, procure your electricity. We have the green aggregation program that would be like the next tier down. That was an opt-out program that we put in place for anybody who was in a general ComEd program. Basically, that uses renewable energy credits to make our supply that comes into River Forest more green. That's a little more esoteric because credits are kind of a philosophical system, but that is a great way that people also can participate in running a sustainable home. And then, of course, the final option is that people don't have to do anything. Right. So whatever service they're using, whether it's ComEd or a third party, they can certainly continue to do that for their supply and delivery. One thing to keep in mind is that community solar people can do on their own, as well as programs like green aggregation through for-profit companies. It's actually an unfortunate issue where there's tons of marketing out there, people knocking on doors, lots of mailers about all these different companies that can sell credits or actually can sell shares in solar farms. So people can do it themselves, but by us joining the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus program, we have the ability to do a top-notch program where people don't have to sort out if this company is viable, if they're, you know, if they're ethical. They don't have to sort out any of that because that's all been done by the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus, who has spent years putting this program together using the best producers and the best terms for the customers, which is our residents. Sorry, it's a little bit long-winded, but
no,
I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Go ahead, Ken.
If you could explain, you know, like you're saying, everyone is getting a ton of flyers and mails about different systems, including, you know, the SolSmart as well. What will be the community rollout as far as the educational part of it? Mm-hmm. To let people know, are you going to compare and contrast, or
yeah, great.
Say, hey, the Metropolitan supports this.
Thanks. That's a great question, Trustee Johnson. I appreciate that. So the good news is there's been several progressive communities ahead of us that have done a lot of work on this. And what the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus has done is essentially provided us with, you know, like we've tried to explain it to ourselves like 100 times, which is the only reason I can talk about it. They've put together mailers. They put together posters, stuff that we will put on our website that kind of explain this, you know, in graphics and make it very easy for people to figure out. And then there's surrounding communities like Oak Park, but also up north, a lot of communities like Northbrook and Glenview and Glencoe, Winnetka Highland Park, that have all shared all their materials that they put together for these. So we're on step 4 of 11. The next 7 steps are basically the marketing aspect of this, which, you know, we're lucky to have a lot of stuff that we can borrow. It's not easy to explain this to people, so that's an important piece of this.
Thank you for describing this. So this is Trustee Bachner. And I have to agree, you know, this is something that I've always wanted to participate in, and I just don't know what is the most, you know, who is reputable and who is not. And so marketing that can communicate that. And I think I saw in the package that was sent to us, you know, usage of our village logo next to the information that's provided you know, saying things on our website or in materials that say like, the village really approves and stands by this program, I think is going to be so helpful to people who are interested and want to partake. I guess a couple of questions that I have is, as I was looking at the presentation provided by MMC, it shows electricity bill and how what that looks like. And so are people who get into this program, are they receiving two bills that they then have to pay for? One as a subscription bill from this program and another bill from ComEd that would be typically lower than we would see?
That's a good question, Trustee Bacher. Thanks for that. It should be a consolidated bill, but that's actually something that I want to check on, because in the materials, it shows a lot of math, right, on different pages. And I think that's what you're alluding to. This should actually all come through ComEd, even though it's a third party that's administering it. But I will check on that for you and get back to you to make sure.
Sounds good. And then you mentioned subscribing. And when I read through the information, it felt like there wasn't any fees to participate and to become a member, but I wasn't so sure when you were speaking. Do you have a sense of that?
For the village or for residents?
For residents.
There is not. Okay. There are no enrollment fees at all. There is an agreement that residents need to agree to that the village attorney is going to have to review before we are able to send that out. But there is not only no fees, but there's actually no termination fees as long as it's 30 days. And so what the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus, you know, since they're representing, 130 local communities, they negotiated, you know, the smoothest deal that they could find, which is why it frankly took them 2.5 years to put this together. Short answer is no, there are no fees for residents or for the village.
Sounds good. And then final question, as these kinds of things become more available, as people become more aware of their opportunities to use alternative means of energy, and let's say, you know, a year or 2 years from now, or a year and a half from now, if I have a 2-year service agreement, I find that I can put solar panels on my roof. How does that conflict with this? Can I do both? What would that look like in that situation?
So I have a couple answers to that. So first of all, you can do both. So if you start generating your own electricity, essentially you're not going to be pulling power from the grid. Therefore, you're not going to pay for it, whether it's through ComEd or whether it's through the community solar program. The second answer to that program is now that CEJA just passed today, which is the huge new Illinois basically sustainability and energy bill. We don't know what's in there. We know there's all kinds of things to promote solar, and it's going to basically take the programs that CEJA passed in 2016 and double down on a lot of those. So my guess is there's going to be very significant incentive for people to put solar on their roofs, much more so than there currently is. And right now there's very aggressive incentives. So I think, you know, we'll see, but I think there's going to be a lot of reason for people to go with solar if they have that ability. And with the incentives, it's going to make it, it won't matter if you're in community solar or not. It's going to be, you know, an easy ROI.
Okay, thank you.
Just one more question, please.
Sure,
so if all the stars aligned and everything you correctly marketed to everyone, what's like a potential date that if everything worked out? I understand there are a lot of things that have to happen. Is there a certain time? What kind of timeline would you think?
So we can enter the program at any time. I would think if we pass the resolution tonight, then we're kind of off to the races on the marketing aspect. And our goal would be to have this going by January 1st. We don't know what speed bumps we're going to hit between now and then, but that would be the goal, would be to start the new year with a big marketing splash and a lot of good information for our residents to sign up.
Yeah, there's a nice on page 15, kind of 1 through 5 steps need to be taken. This is obviously the first step is the municipal sponsorship.
Yeah, and we, you know, we already, in those first steps, you know, we had a letter from President Ducey. You know, we've already done a lot of the, I won't say hard things, but like, you know, the time consuming things. And I'm, you know, with my village colleagues, we're now going to have to, you know, start knocking out the website and all those fun things.
I have one question. Eric, first of all, thank you very much. I think this is a great idea. I do have a question, though, regarding, I know there's references to, you know, communities, farms, and then solar developers. Do we know, or when you get to the point of selecting which farms or which developers, or how does that work? I know eventually you're going to get to that point, I'm assuming.
We do, right?
Okay.
This is now, like, at the point of, like, buying your meat at Whole Foods, where you can trace it exactly back to, you know, Farmer Joe. So, yeah, so when we do actually sign up, it'll be legally a share of an actual farm, and we will know where it is and who the developer is and all that fun stuff. Yeah.
Have those been vetted by MMC?
They have. So the MMC has already signed an agreement with several developers for this program.
Okay, terrific. Thank you.
Thank you.
One question. So you mentioned the word share. Like an investment that goes up and down?
It does not, and I'm probably using the wrong terminology.
Okay.
One other question too. Is there ever a saturation point in which we have used up all the different, I don't know, like investment, I'm going to use the word share too, so, but investment shares, so that there might be a point where residents are no longer, because everybody is doing it.
Yeah, we'll use that word wrong together separately.
Yeah.
So that is what the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus has told us is that they have plenty of capacity right now to take on River Forest as well as other communities. That would mean that we're really, regardless of, because we're small enough, regardless of how many people from this community opt into this program, they are saying they have plenty of capacity to accommodate that. In theory, this will run out at some point, or the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus will have to go out and make another deal with another developer for more generation.
Sorry, Erica, I didn't know if you were still asking. Okay. Eric, hi, it's Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Sorry, I can't see you. Thanks for doing this. This is perfect. This is where we should be. And I know it's what we were waiting for when we did the aggregation. A couple questions for you. The materials talk about a wait list. And then at one point in the materials, it says that no new projects are expected for the next 4 to 5 years. So I couldn't figure out if the wait list was for municipalities to sign up or for individual resident subscribers to sign up, but it doesn't sound like you're talking about a wait list.
Yeah, so so that is alluding to municipalities. And I'm not sure, even though we're not subscribed, we're in the program right now because we have committed to it, in a non-binding way, and then we're working through the process. My understanding is that part of the presentation, and actually several parts of this presentation, will probably not be the same after we sort out what's in the new legislation, because there is supposed to be a very significant community solar incentive program, which is going to make developers go buy lots of farms. But short answer to that, Katie, is that we've been told we will not be part of a wait list. We would be able to enter the program wholesale.
Wow. Okay. So if we're able to potentially start January 1st with, if we get the municipality contract with between River Forest done, and then our residents can start signing up, How does, I read in the materials that if you already have opted into aggregation, you can still do the solar. You might get a smaller discount than the 20%. Could you talk about that a little bit for those who wrote, those residents who are already in the aggregation program?
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm not good at math, as you know. So, but basically, so if you're in the aggregation program, really that you're still paying the same ComEd rates, right? There was no price difference in that. Basically, we're just buying green credits, you know, to kind of offset. So if you then enter the community solar program, my understanding of it is that it's not affected by the green aggregation, except that your share can't be that big because part of your power is already through green credits. So, and I forget what the percent is of that. It's actually a low percent. It's like 20.
What is our percent? That green who's in the program?
I might have to look that up. And so you would be able basically to, you know, buy enough into the community solar program to offset, let's play with that 20%, the other 80%, but not 100%. So that's kind of where the math can get a little weird for people who are in the aggregation program.
Yeah, so going with your numbers, you could get 20% off of 80% rather than 20% off of 100%.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, so it'd be a 20% smaller discount.
I think that will be important to communicate to residents, because as you mentioned, it sounds like the green aggregation program is opt out. So I imagine most residents are then in it. And so if they're not seeing the cost reduction that they're expecting, that might be frustrating. So just
we'll find
education.
Out, Erica, the percentage, but as I understand it, I think it's smaller, but I wonder if we could get those to opt out of that program and then opt into this and get the full credit.
And I need to look up and see at some point we're going to have to renegotiate aggregation in the near future too, because we didn't do a very long-term contract on that.
Right.
It was 3 years.
Yeah.
Trustee Bachner, you know, I think communication is going to be everything on this. We're going to really have to, you know, put it in a way that's very simple, very clear, and we're going to spend a lot of time doing that, and the entire commission is going to help doing that as well as the village staff.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, Eric, with the aggregation, the village earned money. We were getting like $60,000 a year.
30, I think, Katie.
Okay, I would,
60,000 a month.
But that's okay. Regardless, it's interesting because the village was getting that money. Now with this program, which is a cleaner energy, it's the resident who's getting the discount.
Yeah, which we all liked better when we first went into this. The aggregation is interesting because, you know, we basically get a stipend. But this is a lot better because obviously the savings goes to where it needs to go, which is the residents.
Yeah. And let me just say, I mean, I think we were just trying to get into clean energy.
Exactly.
That was a great place to start.
Our conversation on the aggregation was like, this is better than what we're doing. Let's get it done.
Right.
And then we'll move on to community solar, which is where we are.
Yeah. And I just want to echo what Ken started out with, and Erica also articulated that, Eric, I think education is the key here. And, you know what you're going to do there. I would also ask that we do some sort of a look for the village label or the co-branding of the village label with the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus brand as well. Maybe put that on our website, because as Ken said, we all have gotten so many pieces of mail from competitors and people come to our door and we get emails from them and we make mistakes and it's frustrating. And I can easily see residents saying, whoa, I've already been burned on this. I'm not going to do anything here. And we don't want that. We want them to have the advantage of getting into this program and saving the money and helping us get to 100% carbon free by 2045. So the education is key. And I would also suggest, you know, I know that there's an 800 number that's in the materials. I think it's probably directly to MC Squared. Maybe we can do a program at the library, you know, go old school like we used to in the old days and have invite residents to come in and maybe even do it on Zoom so they can ask their questions too.
Yeah, that's a great call, Katie. And by the way, those library things worked. They always drew big crowds, and that's a good way to do it. And just something that Katie just talked about too is, you know, the legislation that just passed has our state at a 25% reduction by 2025, 45% by 2030, and 100% by 2050.
Yeah.
So the efforts we're doing here in River Forest are going hand in hand with what the state's efforts are, which we're going to have to do. Actually, we're going to probably have to do more as well to help get there.
Well, in fact, Eric, if you can remember, I mean, we were one of the trailblazers in this area several years back when we signed the Chicago Climate Charter, us in Oak Park were the probably lone, one of the
yes,
lone.
Yes, you were one of the first signees on that.
Right,
so.
Right. We were so totally trailblazers. So I'm guessing that's one of the good reasons with many, I mean, yourself and when Katie was the chair of the Sustainability Commission, we've been very much involved with the, you know, Municipal Mayor's Caucus, which I think is great, gives us a little bit of an edge on this and our commitment to, you know, the charter and our commitment to the Climate Action Plan, which is, this is a big piece of our commitment to the, you know, the Climate Action Plan about getting to, you know, reduce our greenhouse emissions. I think it was 2050 in our charter. So this is super, I'm super excited about this because this is going to really put us on the map. So I really appreciate your efforts and the commission's efforts and working with the Mayor's Caucus on this. So thank you.
Yeah, we're happy to do it.
Cool. Any other questions? So tonight we're going to be passing the resolution. So if you look on the presentation on 15, this is the first pass the board resolution, submit a letter of endorsement, and then start the marketing and all the rest of the
we'll get to work then.
That goes along with it. So so without any further questions or comments, I'll ask the clerk to please take the vote on the resolution.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes, and thanks again, Eric.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes, and thank you to the Sustainability Commission for their efforts around this.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Hey, very good, thank you. Okay, so let's move on to the unfinished business, which is, I guess we'll take them separately or can we take them all together?
8-1-4.
So
you're free to take them together unless trustee objects.
I mean, they're all related to the same thing. Lisa will explain every piece of it. So just for, you know, process, I would like to take them all at once, and then we'll take each of the motion, each of the items. Lisa will go through.
Yes.
So if I can get a trustee to move items 8A, 1, 2, 3, and 4.
I'd like to make a motion that we move on items 8A, 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Second.
All right. So with that, I'll let Lisa kind of go through this a little bit. I think they did an excellent job, bringing back, I think, a more robust system. So I'll let you go ahead.
Sure. So as the board may recall, in October last year, we began conversations regarding the need and the opportunity for an advanced metering infrastructure. This system provides a number of benefits to the community and to our water customers, specifically greater transparency or greater understanding of how your water system is operating, the type of water usage that you're generating in your own home, with the ability to use an online portal to view your water usage. Using this system, you can identify leaks much faster, which will reduce the possibility of high water bills coming to residents. Oftentimes, it's those very high water bills that alert them to leaks in their system. But at that point, that water has already gone through the system and they are responsible for paying that bill. So this will be great customer service improvement to our residents. In addition to that, it helps with water conservation because we can identify those leaks much sooner. Residents can make informed decisions about what their water usage is and hopefully encourage water conservation. In addition to that, it is an efficiency measure for our organization. It eliminates the need for drive-by water reads because that system will all be replaced. Right now, employees go, it used to be back in the day, an employee would literally go and read your meter. Now they drive past with a radio signal and read it from a vehicle. This eliminates all of that by sending real-time updates to the water division so that they can generate the bill using that information. It also then eliminates the need for village vehicles to be traversing through the streets, which we think is another group. So the point that we're at tonight is the next step in the process of actually implementing. Based on the conversation last October, the village staff began working to incorporate this into the CIP and into the annual budget. The board took the first step of awarding a contract to the project manager, Siemens, in April of this year. And we are now back at the point of actually purchasing the water meters, the related equipment, the labor to make those installations, as well as the online portal. We did have the unfortunate situation that some of the costs exceeded what we initially budgeted. Jeff's going to give us a little bit more information here in a moment, but we have been able to reduce that overage, which is what you have before you tonight, and we have restated, in fact, reduced the scope of services through Siemens as a result of a revised project scope. And so in addition to the equipment, the customer service portal, the installation of that equipment, you also have a restated scope of work with Siemens as part of your action items for tonight. So with that, I will turn it over to Jeff, and he will change your presentation there.
You didn't, but you went through an awful lot. So okay. I will try to fill in some blanks here. As Lisa mentioned, there's just a lot of components to this project. It's a very big undertaking. So I just kind of want to walk through the four elements that you have here before you this evening. The first and foremost, and I apologize, it's not the same as the order on the agenda. I should have set that up better. But the first one I want to talk about is the contract with Siemens. To start establishing the project, we obviously had to do that first. Siemens and Aaron Perry will be up here in a few minutes to walk through a bit of a presentation. They helped us scope out the actual project, hone in on the numbers, establish the true scope of the work. So as Lisa mentioned, that was the contract that was approved back in April of this year. At the time, because we were just starting, we still didn't have a great handle on the true numbers of it all. So the original scope of work with just the Siemens element, the contract that was approved was for a little over $1 million. It was $1,028,000 and change. Since then, as we've continued to refine numbers, as we've continued to get down to or in trying to get under budget, we've since revised the scope of work with Siemens. That's been reduced down to $883,000 and change. So that item that you have here before you tonight, it's already been approved. We're revising the scope of work and basically reducing the number on the Siemens contract. The next one I want to walk through is the actual meat and potatoes of this all. It's the core and main purchase order. This is where we're paying for the water meters, the transmitter units, and the equipment that is required to set up the kind of remote network, if you will, that can pull all of this information remotely without needing to have a staff member drive around town and take those readings. So the infrastructure part is what you see here before you tonight as it's 8A is the core and main. So that's what 8A is. It's the infrastructure. It's the hard cost of this. Mm-hmm. The last big one that we're looking at here tonight is the customer portal. This is basically the interface that Lisa mentioned for all of the residents. So you'll be able to see, and again, Aaron will kind of show you some pictures of what residents will be able to see. You'll be able to see your consumption, your past consumption trends. You'll be able to kind of generate notices. If you do have something leaking and you're not aware of it, it'll be more proactive than we've been in the past because it is much more real-time data collection. So the customer portal is the last cost element that you have here before you tonight. The only other item on here is the census terms. Census is the manufacturer of the meters and a lot of this equipment.
There's no cost associated with these census terms. This is just an approval of the terms with census. All of this stuff has been reviewed by the village attorney. So again, this is just kind of more of a formality at this point. So with that said, I will turn it over to Erin. She can walk through a presentation and then we'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Okay, thank you. I'm gonna share my screen here. Can all see it. So thanks for hearing from us today. I'm Erin with Siemens and I'm your designated project manager. So I've been working with the village staff to select a system for you and work out the details and scoping how we're going to get it installed and implemented in an efficient quality control way. So this is a presentation. I'm just going to review with you some basics. And also let you know that I do have members from Corum Maine, as well as WaterSmart, which is the customer portal, on the phone. So if you have any questions at any time, don't hesitate to interrupt. I'm sure between some of us, we can answer them. So I'm gonna start off with the Census AMI technology that was selected by the village. This is a fixed-based system, and what's gonna happen is we are going to start the project by installing the network, and that will consist of one antenna placed on a collector or on your water tower, I believe it is. And that's going to be the focal point for transmitting all of your meter readings. So we'll be installing transmitters on every water meter, connected to every water meter at every residence and commercial. And once the network is up and running, that transmitter will read the meter every hour and then transmit reads automatically through a radio frequency to the collector. And then the collector will then transmit it through the backhaul and up into the village billing office. So there will be access to hourly reads now from every meter in your village, whereas I think now you're only collecting one read every billing cycle. So that's the real benefit of AMI for you. With the AMI network, and there's some pictures on the right here, those are the new water meters, as well as the transmitters that are going on the homes, comes a meter data management system that allows the village staff to manage all of the network. Make sure that all the meters are continuing to read and transmitting hourly reads to your system. And there will be access to reporting so you can manage consumption trends and the health of your network. So that's going to be Census Analytics. And that's what the software as a service agreement that you guys will also be signing off on related to. So that's just a brief summary of the technology that has been selected. Census has been servicing, and Corum Maine have been servicing your village for many, many years. So I think you'll have no problems there. They're very reliable and good company for service. So I'm going to move on to give you another deliverable, and that's the customer portal. So this is what's going to give your residents the benefit of being able to see their consumption. So not only will the village staff be able to see every hourly read that's coming from every meter, but that's going to be extended to each resident. So they'll be able to access this customer portal and view their hourly consumption, even from their cellular device, from a laptop, whatever is convenient for them. They can automatically get notified of any leaks. So if a leak is detected at their residence, they will get automatically notified. They don't need to register in advance to get that benefit. So this WaterSmart customer portal is got coaching abilities. So when they do notify you of a leak, it'll walk you through resolution of the leak as well. I'm just going to move along here. There's two aspects to this customer portal. There's the utility experience, which will allow you to converse with your residents much in a digital fashion. You can generate mass messages, send them out to all of your residents via this customer portal. It doesn't only need to be used related to your water customers. So it can bring a lot of your management of consumption as a whole. You can look at consumption on class by based on classes. You can look at trends. And that's the utility side of it. And then there's the customer experience. And like I said, there's a leak resolution. It can walk you through bill explainers. And you can also set alerts for yourself, like to notify me if I'm approaching a high bill or if I have a high consumption at the time. Please send me a text alert or an email or whatever you choose to have them send you. So I want to now go into a little bit of our installation approach as Siemens. You know, a meter project, an AMI project, is kind of a big deal. A lot of residents tend to freak out, as well as the utilities, because it's a big undertaking. I mean, you're talking about ingesting a lot of data. And so we like to do a public outreach campaign whereby we educate your residents on the system, whatever questions they have. We will answer them. So we are ready and available to present, you know, content on your website. We'll put together a video, instructional video that you can post on your website. We'll do fact sheets. We'll send letters out to every resident explaining the system and the program. And we will gladly attend any town halls or, like, I think you were talking about library events, whatever means and methods that we're able to attend, we will be there to answer questions for your residents. And another part of this is our active mailing. So we will be not only sending welcome letters, but we'll have postcards, you know, encouraging them to sign up for WaterSmart, for example. We will leave door hangers letting them know if we've been there to work on their home. And so just having a lot of communication with your public is a big part of what we'd like to do. And then another piece that's key to these projects is data integration. And this is just kind of a diagram. It looks a little bit confusing. But, you know, you're going to have data from not only your billing software, which is Springbrook, but from the new meters. You're going to have new every hour reads for every customer. Then the customer portal and also the census MDM system. And so we will focus on setting up all of the integration pieces between those components. And we will make sure that those pieces are running smoothly before we start installing to make sure that you don't run into any issues as you try to issue bills. Along with our installation services, we provide an installation portal where you can have real-time visibility into what we're doing. We will upload pictures, and you will know a status at any point in time of the project, as well as we provide a call center that can be called to set up appointments or to ask questions about the program if there are any. Staff training is another big piece. You know, it's only as good as you know how to use it in the future. So we'll make sure that we meet with every department and make sure they're fully trained and comfortable operating your new system. And this is a general schedule. I can tell you that we have it starting today, pending approval, of course. We will get those materials ordered, and we have a very aggressive schedule. We can complete these retrofits in a couple months, hopefully, after we receive the materials. Long term, you know, we're going to have to wait a little bit longer to receive the water meters themselves. So I have them those scheduled to be completed at the beginning of next year, with the target of completing the whole project by next March. So that's. Are there any questions? I mean, you could have interrupted me too. No.
Is this the end?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, any questions? I just want to, you know, add that this is a discussion we had, I think, several. We had the original.
A year ago.
Right. And it was important back then, and it's still important because many of our residents don't know the usage until it's too late. And you get a water bill at the end of the month, and many of our residents, and I know, who's here forever, Georgette, who was wonderful, and she used to go through each of these water bills tediously and call people, and they were all very grateful that they called, but it was too late.
It's like, right.
If you had just called me before that leak in the toilet, before that, leak in the shower, and many of our homes are old, too. And so, there are cases, many cases where this would help a lot. And yeah. So I've been very supportive of this for that reason, and the fact that it does fit in with our Smart City initiative, because we're always looking to, increase customer satisfaction and, customer service. So, but I'll open it up for questions to the trustees on the three, portions of this contract.
I do have a couple of questions. Number one, the water meters, I'm assuming, they'll be installed outside of people's residence, or will they? You'll have to go inside?
We will have to go inside. If we're changing the water meter, we will need to schedule an appointment to access the residence. And there's a series of notifications that will be mailed asking them to schedule. They can schedule by calling or going on the web scheduler. Those will be inside appointments, and they take roughly a half an hour.
Half an hour, okay.
I do want to clarify one item. We don't have to change out all water meters.
Yeah. Right.
So just to be clear, there's only about 314, I believe,
okay.
actual water meters that need to be replaced. The bulk of the project is...
I don't think Jeff is talking about
the bulk of the project is just the transmitter. And
okay.
So that is a far less invasive there. Maybe you can touch on that a little bit more, but some of those don't need to be inside appointments. Some of them can just be done on the exterior of the home. So it's not a complete swap out of all meters within the within.
And for the ones, the 300 that have to be replaced, are they randomly all over the village, or is it regionally in certain areas? Or?
They are scattered.
Scattered?
Random,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And Rez, just so you know, I mean, it wouldn't be unusual because even our water department used to go in all of these homes just to check the meters. So I don't think, unless you're a brand new resident and never happened, it wouldn't be an unusual,
we have a cyclical water meter.
Another question. I know you mentioned earlier that if there's a water leak, it's going to send information. Will this system allow residents to say, hey, if
don't
once I
yeah
I can send my I can set up my own notifications
I have a couple of questions. So in regards to high consumption and being and making sure that households stay within what they typically are used to, and leak resolution, is what the meter will be or the website will be alerting residents to, is it the consumption based on the footprint and the size of the housing, or is it to what you previously have typically had for water consumption in the past?
So Brenda, I don't know if you want to answer this, if you want to unmute, or I can take a stab at it.
Are you, when we're talking about your comparisons, when you're looking at your My Water score, we actually ingest information from the city assessor's office, as well as the weather API. So you're, and also the consumer themselves, or the customer themselves, will log on and say, in my home there's two of us, or there's six of us, so that you're comparing apples to apples. So it's kind of a combination of things.
Got it. So a consumer can put in some information and then see, oh my gosh, we've been paying so much and there's maybe a leak, and then take some action towards that.
Correct.
That's what you're saying.
Okay. Right. And they can set up settings like notify me when I'm 25% higher than what's average or expected, or 50%. There's certain method settings you can set.
Wonderful. I'm also wondering for the transmitter, are there any locations or any issues with the location from the water tower to the outskirt, you know, the far points of the village? So, you know, where I live, I'm nearly at the corner of North and Harlem. Is it harder to get those? I don't know about radio waves and things like that.
Right. Jerry, if you want to unmute and address this, we actually provided Core and Main and Census with all of your, a list of all, every resident address in your village, and they do a propagation study where they model the network connection. Jerry, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, we did a propagation study a while back. Aaron requested that we do one. So we ran a complete route file with all your accounts. We plotted them on a graph, and, you know, with the tower and the available height that you guys provided, that we will be guaranteeing you a minimum of 98.5% read rate for everything within the village, you know, at that tower, the tower location, from the prop study. So we have did a complete prop study, and we'll be able to pretty much read everything within the village limits with the prop study. Now, if we do fall short of that 98.5% read rate, you know, then we would determine that if we need any additional equipment, that would be on our behalf to provide that to the village. The village would have to pay to put it in and install it, so to speak, but we would provide it at no charge. So they feel pretty confident that we'll be able to read everything within the village limits with the one tower that we propagate.
Got it. And are there ever outages or these transmitters going down due to weather? And how quickly does that get fixed typically?
Well, the actual transmitters itself will not go down due to weather. I mean, they're designed to be in our environment. The transmitters will be located on the exterior of everybody's home. So they are designed for that environment. So we wouldn't have an issue there. The only issue you could potentially have is, you know, if there was a tornado or something, knock down your water tower, maybe knock down our antenna, you know, something to that nature. Our meters and our transmitter store integral data, so that once we get power back, we'll be able to transmit the data. It'll be stored and captured within the components that are out in the field. You know, worst case scenario, we do have a drive-by equipment if we needed to, if it was a catastrophic situation and you needed to get meter reads done and your tower, say, went down or your antenna went down on the tower, we'd be able to, be able to drive throughout the community, grab the reads, and still be able to get bills off if you decided that was what you needed to get done. So there is redundancy in the system, and we are prepared for the inclement weather that we have within this geographical area.
Great. One last question. Will the historic consumption information be available to residents? I know you were talking about integrating a few different data points. Will that be available on the website so they could read what we have last year and maybe go a year or 2 years back and see the trend? Or is it starting?
Is it 2 or 3 years?
We'll go back 3 years. You know, we'll go back 3 years on our side. Between Water Smart and what we would provide, I can maybe let either Aaron or maybe Tim, you know, he's my IT director. He can maybe sort of share on that. But like from a standpoint of the village, you'll have a minimum of 3 years of historical data. And then we do pass historical data back through the consumer portal. I just don't know how far back to go. Maybe Tim can enlighten us on that.
I'm sorry, this is Timothy Ray. The consumer portal, you'd have to ask them, because we go back on your billing system, we'll go back 3 years, like Jerry said. But that's the other Water Smart system is not us. That's not our system.
3 years as well. So you can do some comparing between periods. You know, it's not helpful to compare versus the prior month, but maybe the prior year at the same month. So that could be all be done with reporting as well.
Yeah, the consumer portal will be able to go, we'll be able to compare from, you know, last year at the same time. And then we also, I mean, I think I may not talk out water smart, but a lot of them, you know, indicate, you know, what weather conditions are during that time and what the rainfall is and all that. And that usually coincides with, you know, with water usage. But water smart would need to respond to that.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm more than happy. In fact, I encourage, you know, once we have the program up and live, that we come back and maybe have some share sessions, some tutorials for your residents so that they can get more familiar with what's available to them.
Great. Any further questions? I know about the businesses. I mean, one of the questions was businesses and schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this applies to all water meters and all water customers across the institutions.
I have a couple questions. And actually, the first one is really more for Lisa and for Jeff. So I know we've been talking about this project for a while, but I have a little sticker shock on it, looking at the numbers. In year one, this is going to cost us $1.43 million. And then another $150,000 over the next 5 years, if I'm reading the numbers right. And our full water and sewer budget is 1.387. So our year one cost is more than our budget for the first year, right? Just not by much, but it is.
I don't have the water budget in front of me, but that sounds close. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we, I mean, this year we had some water and sewer expenses. One was at the north end of Keystone. And then a couple months ago, or over the last couple months, we've been dealing with customer or residents who had pipes that burst on pipes that weren't on the main. And then the village decided to pay for that rather than the residents paying for that. If we're over budget, if we've used up our entire water and sewer fund with this, how are we going to handle things like that that come up?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a couple of points. Number one, we don't have to make all of the purchases. So the total purchase is not all paid at one time. So there are monthly payments that we make to Siemens. The equipment we do have to purchase at one time. And so there are different expenditures. Basically, the expenditures roll out at varying times over the fiscal year. So we do have water revenue that comes in during those periods of time. And so we are in a good position to make this purchase. The village had always anticipated that we may take on a little bit of debt to do this project, and that the debt service would be paid in the coming years to fund this project. But the water fund overall is in a good position to absorb this at this point in time. In addition to that, the village is in the process of launching its water rate study to ensure that this enterprise fund has sufficient revenues to account for all water projects currently and going forward.
And it was part of our budgeting for the last 2 years. Yeah. So last year and then the one that we're in.
Okay. And do we have any sense of how many leaks we have in the village in any given year on average?
Water leaks?
Mm-hmm.
Good question. Hang on, let me look to Rosie and Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, Public Works and Development Services, we can track the leaks that are unmetered. So when we do our annual leak survey, the leaks that we track are not going through anyone's meter and would not really have any. This project won't help that. That's why we need to continue doing our annual leak survey. In terms of residential leaks, I'd have to.
residential leaks, this will help that, because right now when a resident has a leak, they find it could be 2 months past and their bill is now thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. This will help us on our end monitor water usage. So even if a resident isn't monitoring their water usage, we can monitor and contact them in a much more real-time.
Yeah. To me, I know Georgette went through, you know, every bill. I mean, every resident, every bill.
Yeah,
and,
I would say
and called residents.
A couple every billing cycle at least.
Yeah.
And so even if it's, let's just say three per billing cycle, I mean, it's that's still a substantial amount of water and money that residents wouldn't have to pay if they were able to catch.
So we were.
Three
leaks.
Wait, hang on. I'm sorry, Katie. We didn't hear you.
Yeah. Should I go ahead?
Yeah.
So are you saying we were having like three leaks in the village per billing cycle?
No, I don't know. I don't have that exact data. If we want to return with that data, we can. We can take a look at that. But the point is even if it's one or three, that's still a substantial amount. Even if it's one per billing cycle, that's still a substantial amount of money that residents will not have to pay if they're able to catch that leak much sooner.
I also want to throw in, there's an element, the state, the DNR, are currently looking at revising allocations for all the communities that pull water from Lake Michigan. That's one of the things they're looking at right now. And so truly any degree to which we can reduce, especially water loss, is immensely helpful in that regard, because we are going to start having an allocation, and they have not yet determined what happens if you exceed that. But if we can take these measures to help prevent that from ever happening in the first place, I think that is, it's certainly an advantage we need to find.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to add, currently, you know, you're reading in 100 units. When we install these transmitters, we're going to be reprogramming the meters to read in single units. So it's going to enable you to detect leaks at a much smaller scale, which is going to, you know, as we're installing, you're going to start to see all of your leaks. And I think it's probably many more than three.
That's what we don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, even if it's a small amount like that, this is still.
I think it's probably one of our biggest complaints is, you know, why we haven't been alerted of water leaks. And it's the hardest thing for us to alert the residents from. So this is why this conversation happened a year ago. Mm-hmm. All right. Any further questions? Okay. I appreciate it. I'm going to go ahead and ask the clerk to take the vote.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Vasquez.
Yes.
Brennan.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the trustees believing in this project. Like I said, it was a year in the making. But I will say this before we leave. I know that it's $45,796 over budget. And I'm going to ask the staff, Rosie, Jeff, Lisa, to look really hard and work with the vendors, Seaman, Cormain, and others, to find that $45,000. I think we could do it through various ways. Be nice to get a little discount. So although I didn't want to make that comment prior to, you know, make it predicated on this vote, but I do want to make sure that we seek every possibility to recover that $45,000. So with that, I will, let's move on to new business. It is 9A. So this is just a discussion only, so I will let.
Yeah, and I will invite Mike D'Onofrio up to the microphone. We are joined by Mike. Obviously, Kurt Bowman is here, the fire chief, fire marshal Kevin Wiley, building official Cliff Raddatz, and the building and zoning inspector Bob Kreider has joined us virtually. The village retained Mike's services a few months ago to help us oversee this process and get this implemented. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to walk you through it in a little bit more detail and talk to you a little bit about what our next steps are going to be before this is brought to the board for a final vote next month. We do have to give the state of Illinois notice of 30 days that we're going to make this change. So we have filed that with the state. So the board can't take action tonight. That is something you'll have to return and do in October. In the meantime, it gives us an opportunity to continue with public education efforts and to come back and respond to any questions that may. It does not change what we anticipate will be the effective date of the new code updates, which would be January 1st, 2022. And there will be communication with residents and contractors in advance of that effective date so that they are aware of it. Mike, if you could walk us through, I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Lisa, and thank you, President Aducci and trustees for having me here this evening. I have to admit, since I retired from my real job 4 years ago, I don't generally have to go to night meetings anymore. Yeah. So thank you for the opportunity to let me come this evening. Just as a way of background, as Lisa mentioned, I work for GovTemps or GovHR. I've done one previous project with the village, and I've been in that capacity, this capacity, for over 4.5 years. So I've run across your village attorney in Hinsdale. So prior to that, I spent 30 years as a community development director in both Des Plaines, and I was the last 17 years of my career, I was in Winnetka, director up there. So I've seen a lot. I've been exposed to a lot of municipalities, so I have a pretty good feel for building codes and what municipalities are like. And I'm going to put your attorney online because Hinsdale is one of the older building codes, 2006, I believe. And I always have fun with their community development director giving him a hard time about that. But anyway, this evening, I've got a few things I want to go over. First, what the goals of the building code are. Second, the process that's been involved to get to what we have here this evening. And then third, provide an overview of the building code that's being proposed, the amendments that's found in Attachment B of your handout tonight. And then you're not all completely bored by that. I will then provide some detail on the proposed amendments that are in Attachment B. When people hear building code, they go, oh, that's something. I've yet to see anyone skip into a front counter saying, I got to get my building code. It doesn't happen, okay? It's a regulatory environment. But in all seriousness, the purpose of the building code is to protect the public health, safety, and welfare of residents and work day in and day out in the village. Building codes go back to 1700 BC, where the Babylonian emperor Maredes developed his Hammurabi developed a building code, and if you failed to comply with the building code, the penalty was death. I think we're less draconian now than we were back in the 1700 BC. I know we are, but that's how long we've had building codes. Currently, the village is under the International Code Series 2003 edition. Just so you know, ICC is the acronym for International Code Council. Promulgates is a national and international organization of building code officials, and they develop code series every 3 years. So currently, and I'm not pointing any fingers because it's pretty typical of municipalities, there have been 5 updates. Code series since 2003 code was adopted. Every 3 years, they update a new code series. I have to admit, I'm working in ITASCA now, and ICC stands for the ITASCA Country Club. So forgive me if I get those confused. The code series includes 13 individual codes. Those are identified in your agenda packet. I didn't bring them down to show you that they're like this, and they're individual codes, ranging from the main two that most municipalities use are the IBC, the International Building Code, which regulates non-residential construction, and the other one is the International Residential Code, which regulates residential construction. And there are a whole other series of codes that deal with certain portions of construction, i.e., like the International Fire Code, which your fire chief and fire marshal are very involved with, that deal with fire-related issues in buildings, all the way down to one of the newer codes that's been promulgated is the International Spa and Swimming Pool Code, which people don't. But you'd be amazed at the detail with respect to swimming pools, both in of plumbing, electric, and like that. So they kind of run from soup to nuts. So those are the codes. In addition to your ICC code series, you also have adopted previously the National Electrical Code, which regulates that electrical issues, both residential and non-residential. And then there are three state codes that you're required to adopt: the Illinois Accessibility Code, which regulates accessibility standards and requirements, the State of Illinois Plumbing Code, and the Energy Conservation Code. So those 13 individual codes, plus the Electrical Code, Accessibility Code, Plumbing Code, and Conservation Code, make up all the codes that building is regulated by in the village. Now, a little bit about the process. The village engaged two consultants in addition to myself. They've engaged BNF Code Construction Services. We've used BNF to do inspections for you. They're well known in the field. They've also, in this case, they looked at preparing documents to assist in drafting of the 2015 code edition, given the press of business in the world that never made it to the board, but they had done that work previously. And when we obtained their technical assistance on that, and my position mainly was to coordinate with BNF, work with the village staff to get their input, and then I drafted the code amendments, which are with you this evening. I just mentioned I work with village staff, so I think they're all here tonight, so I may call on them if I get confused. No, so building official Cliff Raddatz, Jeff Foster, the Public Works and Development Services, Fire Marshal Kevin Wiley, and are you done now or are you still fire chief? Okay, all right. and soon to be former Chief Bowman, and also I work pretty closely with Lisa on this. So as a result of that input, that interaction, collaboration, this wasn't done in a vacuum. It was
great. Some of the new codes.
Are you open for questions now, or are you?
However, okay. You'd like
go
to
ahead.
Proceed.
Yes, Trustee Brennan, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I just noticed that you're updating some of the existing codes, and then there were four new codes that, including the Solar Energy Code and the Wildland
yes.
Interface Code. And
correct.
I don't know anything about those new ones. I don't know how they interact with our current solar. Rules within the village, and I don't know what's in that wildlife urban interface code.
So a couple of things, Mike and the other technical staff, you can weigh in if you need to. So very quickly, the 2003 code that we currently have adopted has minimal reference to solar panels in it. So what we have had to do to ensure that any solar panels that are installed in River Forest are installed safely is to operate within the 2015 edition, I believe, currently, is what BNF uses to review that code. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the incremental difference between 2015 and 2018 with regard to solar, I would anticipate it's likely very minimal if there's any change at all. The driving force behind code updates is public safety, number one, but number two, emerging technologies. So in 2003, solar panels just were simply not as prevalent as they are today. So in terms of the ability for residents to install solar panels, that will not change. Permit review fees will not change. The requirements we do not anticipate will change. And so that should not affect and have any impact on a resident or commercial property's ability to install solar panels today. In terms of wildlife interface, yeah, that's a great and fascinating one. If you have insomnia. But no, it's a good question, Katie, in terms of what does that mean? And, you know, the one of the points I want to make tonight is, you know, when you can't see Mike, but when he was talking about how many pages of code there are several hundred pages of code. And so, Mike, do you want to give the board maybe just a broad sense of what that is intended to try to address?
Everything in the built environment.
Yeah, but in terms of wildlife interface.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the wildlife interface is a code that's recently been promulgated by ICC. I don't think it's super applicable to River Forest, but basically, I don't think you have to look past more than the past week to see wildfires, and what that code. Regulates is when you're building, you create a built environment next to large natural areas that might be prone to fires and what have you, so that your construction and your development takes into account that you might be in an area prone to wildfires. So then you probably the biggest thing you have to do is the municipality has to determine an area that they're going to put in this zone. It doesn't just apply to every, and you might look at it and go, when we talked about it with staff, it was the proximity of the forest preserve. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a larger wild area, and there might be some impacts there. So that's why it was put in. But one of the things you have to do with that zone is designate what the zone is going to be geographically. So it doesn't apply to an individual house on the east side of town. First, you would have to, if you decide to proceed with it, identify a geographic area where you want those rules to apply. In effect, it's in the zoning vernacular, we call it an overlay. But that's something you would have to do. But it's a newer code. Again, these are national model codes. You amend them when you want to make it more, in this case, specific to your municipality. And that's one, you know, probably not super applicable, but it gives you a tool if that's what you want to do. I hope that answers your question, Trustee.
Yeah. Thanks. So it sounds to me from what you're saying that by adopting these four new codes, we have to do more work with it. We've got to adopt it like for the
no you can adopt them as they are. I mean, I was just talking about the wildland urban interface code. The other codes, you'll see the amendments are in here. For example, swimming pool and spa code, everybody goes, you know, why do you need a code? Well, there's a lot that goes into a swimming pool these days. Heaters, which means you're bringing gas in, which means it has to be piped properly. You have plumbing involved. You have fencing requirements. Now, you might have that in different parts of your code, but again, ICC promulgated this new code probably in the past 6 years because it's all specifically identified what you need to do in this spa and swimming pool code, and that's a separate code mm-hmm. that you adopt. And when you do the plan review, somebody says, what do I need to do to put in a swimming pool? Well, these are the code requirements, and you can give them a handout sheet. And most people comply.
Yeah.
They have to comply to get the permit, but it's not a very, it's not going to add much in the way of cost to a project, because if it's a heated swimming pool, you're going to hire a plumber and a heating guy to hook that up. You're going to have an electrician come to hook up the pump. So what's being done really isn't any different. It's just you have to confirm that it's done in according with the approved code.
Yeah, and to be clear too, right, like the water for the pool is already, we're already reviewing that. We're already taking a look. Anytime you mix water, gas, and electric, we want to make sure that the public is safe. So we are already performing pool reviews. We're already taking a look at those things. We already have regulations.
Right.
My understanding of this is that it's really pulling it into one area and making it very clear to consumers what codes they have to follow that we already require. So these aren't new regulations.
Right. And I would just add with respect to the solar energy code, and I've seen this explode in the past 5 or 6 years with solar panels, and I think there was some great information you got earlier this morning this evening from your sustainability committee on that, but you may not see it here because other municipalities I've worked in had large subdivisions built in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s with shallower roofs, and you know, these solar companies come in and they go through, I don't know, wildfire. But the point of that code, there's a lot that happens with the installation of solar panels in terms of structural stability of what they're putting in, how they hook it up. And probably the most important thing is where the array panels are, meaning you can't put them all over your roof, because if there's a fire, one thing I've learned over the years is firefighters love to go on roofs and ventilate. So you have to have in effect walkways around the array panel. And with your permit, you're able to look at that. So God forbid there is a fire and the firefighters need to get up on that roof to ventilate, we make sure of that through the permit. Here again, it's a life safety thing. And if they're putting up solar panels that the roof structure can't actually handle, we need to know that. So you'll require structural engineers, most of these solar companies have them, that will look at the roof, make sure it can handle that load, and similarly on the electrical. And most of the solar panels you have today are photovoltaic, meaning they're producing electricity. Back in the day, they were more thermal generated. So there are a lot of electrical components, or a certain number of electrical components that you want. So you want a licensed electrician looking at.
So I have a question. You know, one of the things that Lisa and I, Lisa has brought this up before about updating our building codes, and clearly the board is you know, sensitive to the safety and health of our community, and you know, that's our number one priority is safety and health of our community. And you know, many municipalities, my question is, you know, how many have updated their codes to the 2018, and what unintended consequences came from some of those updates to residents? I mean, we're an older community with older homes. You know, are some of these codes, yes, are meant to be health and safety and health, but you know, what additional expenses do they bring to an older community like River Forest?
Well, let me answer that in a couple different ways. One of the codes that you don't have that we're proposing to adopt is the existing building code. So, for example, now if somebody comes in on one of your typical homes built, it has to be in, and pick me when I go wrong, Cliff. They review it under the Internet Residential Code as certain standards, but that's for construction. You really don't have all the tools. With the International Building Code, I'm sorry, the existing building code, it says we understand that you're going to have existing houses, you might put an addition on. But it gives the flexibility to the plan examiner and the building official to say, you can keep this existing structure the way it is. Don't worry about it. New addition needs to. If there's interface, gives the person doing the plan reviews flexibility to say you're not making it worse, so you can keep it, but the new addition has to go by here. So I would, in my professional opinion, that results in a more reasonable cost. Because trust me, I've worked with a lot of inspectors who go, you touch it, you fix it. Right. You bring it up to code. Well, and I've worked in municipalities that have done that don't have the existing building code. Whether it's like you need to put drywall underneath that stair. Well, my stair's been that way 40 years. I don't care. That's what the code says. Well, with this existing code, you can say you're not going to make it any worse. Leave it the way it is, and it complies with the code. So not every new code adds cost. Actually, it allows you to achieve that life safety, yet at the same time understanding that you're not going to rewire the entire house. Mm-hmm. Maybe that answers.
Yeah, it answered. I mean, I think it's very much did. Okay, so then where we're at right now is just a kind of an update on where mm-hmm. we're. So what is the
next step is that we will come back with this at a meeting in October. And have the board adopt an ordinance, right, updating all of the codes, and the effective date of 1st, 2022. And again, we will continue with public education efforts to alert residents and particularly the building community that this is coming. And we will continue to train staff regarding these changes so that they are well prepared to take them on in 2018. Take them on in 2022, take on the 2018 code. Thank you. Well, thanks. I know. As Mike, I appreciate that. We've got a shorthand. I appreciate all of Mike's effort. I appreciate all of staff's effort. This is a significant undertaking, which is why you don't see municipalities do it every 3 years. The other thing, as I mentioned previously, although there is a 2021 code, it is not uncommon for municipalities to adopt the previous version because it has been well vetted, well accepted, and there is experience in the building community in using this code. You know, you can certainly appreciate, and I think Mike's got a little cheat sheet there of different codes that municipalities have adopted. So Hinsdale's 2006, Burridge is 2012, we're 2003 going to 2018. In the environment of contractors and builders, that would be an extraordinarily difficult thing to navigate if things were changing so much all of the time that it became next to impossible to do. So the point being, these additions and these updates really do focus on new and emerging technologies and areas that had previously not been addressed or field conditions that were discovered that were so detrimental to public health because of that we had to decide to address it, or the ICC had to decide to address it in a new and different way. And so that's not something that happens terribly much. But again, the point is, I certainly appreciate Kathy's concern, and I appreciate any resident's concern of what does this mean for me?
Mm-hmm.
And so what it means is it will also help you with homeowners insurance, right? Because the more modern our codes are, the safer your home is, and that helps with your home insurance. And it also helps to protect labor, but that's why we do this. I think Mike is 100% right. Nobody comes to the front counter very excited to get a permit. No one comes, you know, very excited to have to comply with code. What we will tell you, though, what I think Cliff, Kevin, Kurt, Bob Kreider, who's on the call, will tell you is that they have seen field conditions that would make your eyes bug out at times, right? Our job is to be the neutral third party between the resident and their contractor. And there are some tremendous, wonderful, excellent, reputable contractors that pass inspection first time all the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there aren't, and our job is to be the ombudsman between the resident and their contractor to ensure that what they are doing in your home, in your school, in your church, where you shop, is safe. And so Mike's right, nobody likes to do this. It's not a very popular thing, but it is a very necessary thing.
I have a couple of questions, if you don't mind. And I understand that from 2003 to 2018, I'm sure there was a lot of work, as you mentioned, Lisa. I guess what I'm asking is moving in the future, and I know you're saying not every 3 years. Maybe
6 years is typical.
then I guess should we be looking at, so the next, when is the next? It's 2018, so it's 2021, the
right,
next
so the next code
version?
Series would be 2024.
2024, okay, okay.
And usually you're a year or so or two behind that. I mean, that's just what I've always, or when I've had a permanent position and when I advise the municipality, I say get on a six-year cycle, whatever your, wherever your 6 years falls.
Okay.
And you always want to be one cycle behind.
Okay.
So you might not. You may not, you know, if you go 6 years out from now, you're going to be 2027.
So we would be adopting 2024.
So you'd still be 2024, but I would say do it every 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Another question: when these codes come out, do they give you a like a synopsis or a brief index of the changes? I'm thinking like the AAA documents, when they come out every 10 years, they usually will say these are the provisions that change for the following. I mean,
well, one of the things ICC likes does is they publish books.
Okay.
So there is, they do, when they update a new series, there is an actual publication that says, here's the update from the last edition to the current edition. So that is available. I'm not sure how many years they go back. Usually, since they're in the business of selling books to a certain degree, they're not going to go back 6 or 9 years. They're going to go back to the previous edition.
Right.
So, and so I'm that is out there.
And the only reason I'm asking about that is then whether you look at it 3 years, 6 years, if you look at an index like that, you'll be able to decide, hey, this is worth changing now versus waiting.
And the other thing you have to keep on top of are probably the biggest code is the state plumbing code, which probably has changed most. I don't want to offend any plumbers, but we used to refer to it as a Plumbers Full Employment Act because they had some materials. And so, I mean, for years you couldn't use PVC. We talk about how it up. Now they allow PVC, allow PEX. I mean, so the changes in the code have actually made construction less expensive, as safe, if not more, but less expensive. So you need the ICC codes, but then you're required by state law to adopt the most current accessibility code and plumbing code.
Because we have Mike's expertise here, I would just like to piggyback on Rez's comments. And I think, Mike, you gave some good information to Katie about the International Wildlife and Urban Interface Code and how, you know, some of that is focused on like forest fires and that kind of thing. And to Reza's point, like the idea that, you know, having a summary of that, because that is a new code for us to just see what that entails. And the reason why I'm asking that is because it's not called a forestry code, it's called a wildlife code. And, you know, as we all know, we've had lots of discussion about wildlife in particular here in River Forest.
I think we're confusing.
Wild land. Not wildlife.
Oh, it says wildlife in the.
Yeah, I did a write up on
that. But it's true.
That.
I think that's the nerdest.
No, it's wild
it's
land.
Wild land.
But our apologies for the confusion. I see that.
No,
it
says wild land.
In the cover memo, it is a mistake. So I apologize for that. Yeah.
I started it. I apologize. Yeah.
Okay.
But,
thank you.
A good point so that nobody gets nervous. Let's make sure it's understood.
And I'll do a little bit of I'll do a little bit of digging on that and see. I will tell you, most municipalities adopt it because it's one of the codes. One of the things that when you adopt these codes, you get reviewed by the insurance industry, which is called ISO. I don't know if they've been here. Nobody's ever happy when they show up. But they give you, they deduct serious points. Basically, ISO reviews your fire department, your building codes. They give you a rating, and your property insurance rates are based on that. Okay, one of the components they look at is what edition of the building code you're under and what what code you've adopted. So they might ding you if you didn't adopt the Wildland and Urban Interface Code. And it's just one of those things that, you know,
sure,
one half dozen of the other. So.
And so then too, along with that, Mike, for the ICC codes that are available, there are a few that we aren't talking about here, like the Green Construction Code and the ICC Performance Code. The zoning code, there's a zoning code one as well, but I believe that's because we have our own version.
Okay. The probably the biggest one that's not in what you see is the ICC Energy Code. State of Illinois has adopted that. So
right.
In my so that's part of the code, but it falls under a state code, not an ICC code. Your zoning code doesn't apply because you have your own zoning regulations. They have a plumbing code that doesn't apply because you're using the state of Illinois plumbing code.
So does the state of Illinois Energy Conservation Code include the ICC Energy Conservation Code and the Green Construction Code?
No.
Okay.
No. But I would be willing to bet the majority of what you find in the International Energy Conservation Code is duplicative of what you would find in the Greek code. I don't know of any municipality that's adopted that.
Good stuff. I mean, a good start. So the next step then is to come back with
formal adoption.
So for that, you know, we'll make sure that we get out the information soon enough so you guys can go through it with fine-tooth comb and make sure you come with your questions.
Okay. With my follicle challenge, I don't use fine-tooth.
No, that's all right.
So are we going to be getting different or additional information the next time we see this, or just the same information that we have already?
I think it's the same information that you have already. If you have any specific questions, I would encourage you to email those to us ahead of time so that if there is any information, we can make sure the full board has the benefit of seeing that before they cast their final vote. And just to be clear too, so in terms of updating the building code, staying at 2003, staying at the status quo is not an option I would recommend. What we're really down to is what version you adopt. 2015, 2018, 2020, 2021, we think best practice is 2018. And so that's our recommendation.
And I think, Lisa, I mean, just for simplicity, because I don't think we're pros at building codes, you all are. We're going to take your recommendation unless you say there's something really crazy between 2015 and 2018.
Right.
So I'm going to assume that staff is recommending the 2018.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And let's just keep saying that.
Yep. That's okay. A very simple version. We are recommending that the board adopt 2018.
So everything we see here, I'm sorry, is done. Okay.
I think, you know, one of the things that was mentioned is making it user friendly so that we can explain it to the residents. So with regard to the four, you know, new adopted codes, if possible, a quick little write up on those four,
sure,
just so we can explain it to other people.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to try and make this as user friendly as possible. What I will tell you though, in terms when it comes to reading the codes themselves, they are intended for technical professionals.
Understood.
But providing broad stroke summaries and trying to give the board a better sense of this is the purpose of this, this is what this is for, and this is how it impacts residents, we're happy to do that.
Well, I think what you just said in terms of taking on the existing building code vis-a-vis, you know, what's there,
mm-hmm,
and then what's in, I mean, right there, Lisa, is a great example of, you know, the cost is neutral, could be less.
Right.
Right. Identical.
It could be identical, it could be neutral, or it could be less. Yep. It might be more, but it would be more because of safety purposes. Yeah, there's a lot there. Okay, I mean, this says fair, so any kind of, you know, like I said, broad stroke,
sure,
I think is a...
All right, very good. So let's move on to... thank you,
Mike, very much.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so we've done 9B, so 9C. Again, this is just getting some consensus of goal setting. We've done this in the past,
mm-hmm,
so we're due to have another one. And, you know, Lisa and I chatted about, you know, somewhere in December doing a committee of the whole meeting. And I think prior to that, she'll send out information to kind of get everyone's thoughts, you know, on the, you know, the top five, top 10, whatever, you know, goals that we want to set for the next, not only year, but I would say.
Yeah,
5 years.
Looking at short, you know, near and long-term goals for the board to accomplish. And this is the timing of it is that we would like to know what the board's priorities are heading into the budget year. So we will be into the CIP program at that point and starting with the process of preparing our board that helps us prioritize what we will be spending the next few years on.
Right. Remember, this is just goal setting. It's not like it's, you know, it helps administration, it helps and focus, but it changed too. I mean, it can be very dynamic.
Is it possible to send around maybe materials of what this has looked like in the past, like what you started off with and what you ended up with in one of the goal setting workshops? Because I'm not sure, maybe Res has participated, but I'm not sure that us other trustees have.
Yeah, Res would have had, absolutely, Erica. We will definitely do it.
So, yeah, just quickly, we can absolutely do that. There are materials that we've used in the past leading into it. The goals are noted in the budget and the updates on where we're at in terms of achieving.
But I think Eric is asking a good point, that just what's the process, kind of the process that we've done. And I know that in the past with Eric. I mean,
yeah, we'll get it out a couple weeks ahead of time. So everybody. Yeah,
so you can get the juices going, moving, and it gives you then opportunity to kind of funnel your discussion as well.
Yeah, we tried to do a bit of an environmental scan. These kind of questions to consider as you come to the table so that you are prepared for the discussion.
Super. Well, I think unless somebody has, is everybody okay with December 6th as the committee of the whole meeting?
Sure.
Okay. And then we'll plan on that at 7 o'clock. And that's it. So,
can I just ask one question, Kathy?
Yeah, sure.
I was expecting Lake and Lathrop.
Really? No, they're only coming once a month, so they'll come next time.
Gotcha. So they'll come the second half of September.
Yeah, because they were in the August. So, yeah, they're planning on coming next.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. If I can get a motion to adjourn, there's no executive session. So.
Move to adjourn. Second.
Stockton.
Yes.
That's good.
Yes.
Brennan.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
We're adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Good night.